Up next, Wednesday's weekly press conference by the spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry, Maria Zakharova.
Let me start with a traditional schedule of the foreign minister of the Russian Federation, Sergei Lavrov. On the 3rd of November, Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, will meet the Secretary General of the OSCE, who will have his first working visit after he assumed office in July this year. Mr. Gramenger will take part in the meeting of the CSTO Standing Council, and they will exchange their views on the OSCE matters and plans on the Secretary General during his period of office, and the preparation for the Council of Ministers of the OSCE in Vienna on the 7th and 8th of December. We know Russia has always been interested in its interaction, because the OSCE has always played a role in major role international and European matters, and we regard OSCE as a major actor in decreasing the tension and regaining confidence, which is much talked about. And we also pay much attention to transnational challenges, to terrorism, drug trafficking, and threats in cybersecurity. We will discuss the prospects of training drug policemen in Russia from Afghanistan and Serbia, and to the settlement of regional conflict in Ukraine in Transnistria, Nagorno-Karabakh settlement, and also in the framework of Geneva discussions on stability in Transcaucasia. And we hope that the efficiency of the ODIHR and High Commissioner of National Minorities and the representatives on the freedom of the media and field missions will be increased because they are undergoing a systemic crisis. And we hope for renewal of the reform of the OSCE meant to rectify the geographical disbalance in this organization and increasing the transparency, including in the extra-budgetary projects. We are going to draw the attention of the Secretary General to the importance of developing the charter of this organization and to the work of its executive structures, and will help us to increase the efficiency in security and cooperation. I'd like to welcome the head of the OSCE Press Service, Madam Parvanova, who accompanies the Secretary General during his visit in Moscow. On the 4th of November, there will be a ceremony of conferring by the foreign ministers to the of public awards to foreign citizens that were conferred according to the order of the presidential order of 9th of October for strengthening the friendship and cooperation, for the cooperation in the rapprochement and mutual enrichment of our nations. And special awards will be conferred to the citizens of the Islamic Republic Najam Sahar, but the chief doctor of the Najam Hospital, the translator of from Russian to Urdu, the citizen of Hungary Attila Vidnansky, the Mr. Tretyakov, and to the chief editor of Litovsky Courier newspaper. On the 6th and 8th of November, the minister On international cooperation of the Islamic Republic of Mauritania, Sahel Ahmed Azid Abiy will visit our country, and this is a very important step for the strengthening of our partnership between Russia and Mauritania, and they will discuss current issues of international and regional agenda and exchange views of the situation in North Africa, in the Middle East, in the Sahara Sahel regions, and also about the current situation in Syria and other subjects of mutual interest. Special attention will be paid to facilitating bilateral ties, first of all by promoting mutually beneficial cooperation in the sphere of fisheries and facilitating the work of Russian fishermen in the exclusive economic zone of Mauritania. They will also discuss the prospects of bilateral relations and Russian's help for the professional training of Mauritanian personnel, and also the potential for Russian economic operators in the energy and the exploration of hydrocarbon area. On the 8th of November, the foreign minister will take part in the joint meeting of the joint meeting of the APEC meeting in Da Nang. This will be a final stage in the preparation for the anniversary 25th summit of the leaders of the APEC, and the ministers are expected to take stock of the issues like the promotion of innovative and comprehensive growth and deepening regional economic integration and building up human potential in the digital era, and primarily small and medium enterprising, and also those relating to the food security and climate change. Russia will participate actively in discussions with a focus of acquiring by the Asia-Pacific region an indivisible aspect, character. And a special emphasis will be made on the development of the digital economy and the integration of distance remote territories into the regional economic system, and also with an emphasis on security and countering international terrorism. After the meeting, a joint statement will be issued, and a draft leaders' declaration will also agreed upon. As for the bilateral contacts of the Foreign Minister of Russia on the sidelines of the meeting, so it is being elaborated, and we will inform you additionally on that topic. Now, I would like to proceed to other current issues of international agenda and Russian foreign policy, and like to start with the response to the requests of many media for the surge of the Russians being aboard of Mi-8 helicopter near the shores of Spitsbergen. And we will comment on that topic further. And for the present time, Russia is helping in the rescue and search operation. About 40 rescue officials working there, and about 18 divers equipped with submersibles are also submersible equipment working there. They are examining the remnants of the helicopter at the depth of 209 meters. And a Norwegian large cargo ship is also used to lift the remnants of the helicopters. The investigation into the tragedy was immediately joined by the Russia's Investigative Committee officials and the Intergovernmental Aviation Committee. They are working closely with the Norwegian colleagues, with the representative of the Criminal Police Office, Kripos, and the embassies. The coordination is executed by the embassy in Oslo and the general consulate general in Spitsbergen. So they started the work and cooperation with the Norwegian colleagues at the very first moments when they learned about the tragedy. We thank the Norwegian side for their great help. I could have noticed and would like to comment on the publication by the Russian newspaper Moscow Komsomolets. Yesterday there was an article regarding to hundreds of Russians being in prisons in Donetsk, and we have repeatedly stated that the situation regarding the arrested and the detained Russian citizens abroad is being controlled, especially by our foreign ministry. And we cited specific facts and commentaries, gave special commentaries, and the work is still underway. And when this article was being written, the foreign minister, we didn't get any requests from Moskovsky Komsomolets about the clarification of the events. As a rule, the information regarding those detained received from the relatives and friends of those detained is available, and we are working on the sidelines of the Minsk group, and also we get information from the judicial bodies of the Donetsk and Lugansk regions about the citizens that are facing trial. So that permits us to regard this issue in the legal frame. And there were 17 requests of that type we received. And Russian citizens are still being in prison, and they face their verdicts before 212-2014. And in any case, it's very important to understand, and I'm saying this seriously, what documents were taken as a basis for saying that 300 Russians are in jail in Donetsk and Lugansk regions. And if the journalists have this kind of data, we would like these data to be provided to us. So we are ready to analyze that kind of information. As for a blogger, Mr. Manekin. By the way, initially we got a question during a briefing about his fate, and we said that we would take necessary steps in that direction, but we didn't so far got any telephone calls, any messages, and Mr. Pushilin was actually arrested in Donetsk And Donetsk confirmed that because he had published a fake information about the situation in the Republic. But it was wrong to publish the information about his death. He's not only alive, he's liberated. Whether he's still on the territory of the Donetsk region, I do not have such information, but I would like to stress once again that according to the data that we possess, he is liberated now. As for the other mentioned person in that publication, I wouldn't have said in different other occasions, but I would say now, as for the other Russian citizen.
As for the other Russian citizen mentioned in this amateur work, we will try to get further information. I would like to reiterate that this, we are doing this because we are forced to do so. So I would also like to give a piece of advice to such an important edition as the Moskovsky Komsomolets. Do not go down to such a low level. And I would like to ask you not to make a fool of yourselves. And the most important, do not spread unverified information on the fate of citizens, named citizens. Please ask the Ministry for comments. You know we are always trying to provide it in a timely manner and we will help you. Moving on. We had a request from several of the media, including the network media, on the actions of the foreign ministry due to the death on the 27th of October in Shanghai of a Russian citizen in Zuba, born in 2002, taking into account that there were several requests and this was a very important incident. I would like to talk about it and answer the questions during the briefing. The information that this Russian citizen was hospitalized was received by the Russian Consulate General on the night of the 26th of October. A doctor of the consulate and the employee of the consulate were sent to her. They also contacted the doctors of the Jitsin hospital as well as the model agency who had sent the girl to work in China. Her condition was estimated as heavy. At the same day, due to the complication of her condition, she was transferred to intensive therapy unit. And the hospital was once again visited by the representative of the Russian Consulate General in order to verify that she was receiving all the necessary help. Unfortunately, in spite of the efforts of the medics on the morning of the 27th of October, she died. And currently, the morgue of the hospital contains the body of the girl, and the Consulate General is taking all efforts to establish the final diagnosis in cooperation with the doctors, and it is carried out on a paid basis, and the situation is complicated by the fact that the model agency that had sent a minor Russian citizen to work abroad did not pay for the required medical insurance, and that is why the Russian diaspora in Shanghai conducted timely work to gather the required money to perform the autopsy and other required procedures. But so far this money is not enough, but the consulate and the community keep working. I would also like to draw your attention to the fact that the girl came to China without the support and attendance of legal representatives, and the Consulate General in Shanghai keeps a close eye on the situation and provides all the necessary aid to the relatives of the girl in providing the documents and paperwork and in repatriating the body. I would also like to draw your attention to this tragic piece of news in order to once again raise the question of the importance of the paperwork for going abroad, of medical insurance, and of course, especially when we're talking about minors. Now, moving on to other matters on the international agenda and the development of the situation in Syria, I would like to inform you about it. The situation in Syria and around it remains positive, with the key role of the Russian armed forces. The bulwark of international terrorism on Syrian land is being eliminated, and Moscow continues supporting Damascus in stabilizing the military and political situation and the creation of a good atmosphere in the Syrian society to eliminate the consequences of a long internal conflict. As for the Russian initiative to call the Congress for Syrian National Dialogue, it is currently being elaborated, actively elaborated, and for the details of the Congress, namely the time, the date, and the number of participants, you will be informed later. As we think the delegates of the Congress will face a difficult task of creating a basis for the restoration of unity of all ethnic and confessional and political entities of the Syrian society, its traditional institutions, the ordinary citizens should join the efforts in the establishment of normal political life in the country to define the contours of future statehood. It is our conviction that the Congress of Syrian National Dialogue could promote the transfer of the Resolution 2254 of the UN Security Council on Political Settlement and promote the political negotiation process under the auspices of the UN in Geneva. We continue fight against terrorism, and Syria managed to prevent a terrorist attack in Latakia. During an examination of one of the cars, 50 kilograms of explosives were located in the car. And in the Jobar region, the militants of the Faylaq al-Rahman destroyed a tunnel with Syrian military, and 15 soldiers were killed. And recently, the militants shelled the Harasta city. They also shelled the Damascus neighborhoods of Shagur and Abbasin, and the mine explosives that in the school in Jesrina, to the west of Damascus, killed 6 pupils. In the south of Damascus, the situation remains quiet after several days of violent fights between the ISIS forces of the Palestinian camp of Yarmouk and the Hamas militants. This allowed the Syrian Society of Red Crescent to deliver to the camp as well as to the neighboring neighborhoods of Babila and Beit Sahm their humanitarian and product aid. But due to the continuing sporadic shootings, the UN humanitarian convoy had to turn back. In the east of the country, the government forces continue clearing up the last remaining ISIS-controlled neighborhoods in Deir ez-Zor. The neighborhoods of Hawija Sakhr and the industrial zones in the east of the city have been fully liberated, as well as the Sakhr island on the Euphrates River. The Syrian armed forces have expanded the control zone around the oil pumping station T2 in the southeast of the province of Deir ez-Zor. It is supposed that the offensive of the Syrian army to the last forepost of ISIS in the province of Abu Kemal will take place parallel with the advancement of the Iraqi army in the territory of Iraq and the border pass point of Al-Qaim. We welcome the coordination between Iraqi and Syrian forces in the fight against terrorism in the border regions of Iraq and Syria. The Kurds acting on the east coast of Euphrates have declared the liberation of Al-Busair to the northeast of Deir ez-Zor and assuming the control of the second largest oil field in Syria at Tanak. The Russian military continue regularly providing humanitarian aid to the Syrian population, and overall, since the start of the operation of the Russian air forces in Syria, they have passed more than 2,254 tons of humanitarian aid. The Russian military and patriotic public movement Young Army has gathered 950 school backpacks with all the stationery which were delivered by Russian air transport to Syria, and in September 2017 they were passed to the children of Syria. And Russian civil society also does its best And we often inform you about the actions of the non-governmental organizations in Russia who provide the required humanitarian aid to the Syrian people. And today I would like to talk to you about the following story. The pupils of the school number 1238 took part in providing humanitarian aid and gathered the required stationery for the Syrian children, which were already passed to the pupils in Syria. During the period of the presence of the Russian forces in Syria, with the participation of the Russian military, 178 schools and 35 kindergartens have been restored. Moreover, the representatives of the Russian Center for Reconciliation in Syria have provided medical aid to 380 children, and 14 children have been taken for treatment to Russia. We call on all those who are interested in the establishment of peace in Syria to provide active support for Syrians in their search for the ways to settle the conflict, including sending additional humanitarian aid to the regions of the country which have suffered the most from the war. Now, moving on to another region, we continue keeping a close eye on the situation in the Republic of South Sudan. It is apparent that the current internal conflict in this state is the result of the American geopolitical project to separate South Sudan from Sudan. As a result of the international and African community now have to deal with an internal inter-ethnical conflict in a young South Sudanese state, which is very hard to settle. The continuing military and political crisis that started in December 2013 in South Sudan has already resulted in serious humanitarian consequences. The number of internally displaced persons equals 3.5 million people. The number of South Sudanese refugees in the neighboring countries is 2 million people, and almost 7.5 million people require urgent humanitarian aid. We are convinced that solid peace in South Sudan will be brought not by the threats of sanctions that are now often said by Western countries, but rather progress in political settlement. And in this context, we hope for the success of the white national dialogue initiated by President Kiir. It's important that South Sudanese opposition should make the necessary mutual steps. We support the peacekeeping efforts of the African community, first of all, the East African Intergovernmental Organization for Development, to provide peace, stability, and security in South Sudan. We also consider as very useful the initiative of the organization to conduct in December an international forum to relaunch the peace agreement signed by South Sudan in 2015. We proceed from the fact that the deployment in South Sudan of regional forces of protection under the auspices of the aforementioned organization will be performed with the respect of the sovereignty of the Republic of South Sudan and with respect of the basic principles of peacekeeping. Now, moving on to the situation in Kenya, in accordance with the previous decisions of the Kenyan Supreme Court on the 26th of October, new elections took place in the country, and in accordance with the results announced by the Independent Election Commission, the victory goes to the acting president, who got more than 98% of the vote. His main opponent, the leader of the opposition National Super Alliance, Raila Odinga, withdrew from the election and called to boycott the elections. Due to the actions of the oppositions in 4 out of 47 districts of the country, the voting did not take place. According to the declaration of the observers from African Union, the East African Community and the International Intergovernmental Organization for Development, the elections were conducted in accordance with the Constitution and the electoral laws of Kenya. Moscow notes the eagerness of the elected president to national dialogue, and we hope that this long election process will allow all the political forces to work together on social and economic tasks of the Kenyan society. Yes, I can see that Russia Today would like to ask a question.
You can ask your question after my opening remarks. Thank you very much. Moving on, and on the question that we regularly receive from the Japanese media, I would like to inform you on the details of the second Japanese business delegation to the South Koreans. On October 26 and 30, the second visit of the Japanese officials and businessmen to the Kuril Islands took place to examine the potential for mutual economic activity. The first trip took place on June 27 and ended in July the 1st. The current visit focused on discussing practical ways to implement joint projects in five fields agreed on by two leaders in Vladivostok: mariculture, wind energy, hothouse farming, waste recycling, and package tours. Officials and relevant businessmen on both sides had a thorough discussion on all of these fields. The discussions were mainly focused on concrete commercial and technical parameters of possible cooperation in the mentioned spheres, especially with regard to the experience of the Sakhalin businesses and the implemented bilateral projects in other regions of our country. We assess the results of the second round of the business missions positively. They provide enough material for joint analysis and for further work to realize, to implement top-level agreements on mutual economic activity in the Kurils. This work will be continued in by two working groups on trade and logistic questions. They were built up within the main negotiation mechanism at the level of the deputy foreign ministers. By the way, today Moscow is hosting preparatory meetings of the group's heads on the Russian and the Japanese side. The details I will convey it additionally further. And well, considering the interest to the Russian-Japanese relation, a detailed interest, I'm preparing thoroughly, and I would like to say that November the 2nd, the Russian foreign minister, the Japanese representatives had talks with the representative of the Russian ministry. They discussed current issues of the bilateral relations, including the agreements of two leaders in developing practical cooperation and the schedule of the further political contacts. And now I would like to focus, unfortunately, on the Russian-American relations. But why unfortunately? There is few constructive things in these relations. I would like to see some positive trends. It's high time. But we were not surprised by the new sanctions of the United States. I mean, the publication on the guidance on restrictions against the Russian businesses and the precise instructions of participation in international oil and gas projects engaging Russian companies. In fact, these moves bring little change for Russia. Our economy long ago managed to work under such conditions, and we profit from them, as a powerful incentive was given to whole industries, and Russia is diversifying its trade relations. This opens up new possibilities for us. Unfortunately, the American authorities continue to block long-term contracts and beneficial contracts for their companies. Paradoxically, the United States, once promoting themselves as the paragon of market economy, are increasingly going down to direct economic governance. For political reasons, the USA sacrificed the interests of business, and it deprives America of new working places and hinders economic growth and so on. Sure, we regret Washington's policy to further worsen the bilateral relations. It's a short-sighted policy. which is fraught with negative aftermath that can backfire the United States. For example, it was really embarrassing, the pre-exhibition of the cooperation with the Russian special services. It obviously reduces the opportunities of the joint struggle against terrorism. This move seems this blockade of the security services cooperation seems to be reckless amid the murderous raid of an ISIS adherent on October the 31st in New York. It was staged not far away from the monument to the victims of 9/11, and we have sincere sympathy with relatives of the killed and wounded, and we have no other words except the words of support and sympathy. We would like to point out that the American public should ask why the U.S. Congress passing the law on countering U.S. enemies by sanctions in the summer of the previous year is looking for enemies in the wrong place. We hope that in the course of time, Washington will abandon the current Russia bashing and understand the flaws and futility of confrontation and pressure on us. The quicker it happens, the better it will be for Americans. You know that yesterday the Council of Federation hosted another reading on pressing on the RT and Sputnik from the United States, specifically banning their ad accounts in the social network Twitter. I would like to move to this theme. As you know, the ban was imposed on October the 26th by the administration of Twitter. We use this social network and we thoroughly consider the reaction on this move. We are witnessing a growing resentment within the Twitter community against the nonsense of the managers of this company, the censors of this social network are fairly sad to neglect hundreds openly, for example, extremist and fascist accounts, and they oppress only those accounts of the Russian media. We also have noted the statements by honest US and European experts and politicians who condemned the decision by the Twitter management and considered it an infringement of the freedom of speech. I would like to draw your attention to a very important fact. It was Twitter that in 2016 sent to the RT office a business offer on ad cooperation worth up to more than $3 million during the this took place before and in the full swing of the US election campaign. As RT didn't want to place this expensive ad, Twitter demonstrated remarkable insistence and conducted a special presentation for RT employees. But afterwards, this proposal was rejected for commercial reasons. And you know what happened later from Margarita Simonyan. In our opinion, this ban demonstrates Twitter's economic weakness and its absolute dependence on security elites of the United States that directly controls decision-making this company. As we now see it, we call on all users of the social network to make conclusions. Today, Twitter banned the ad by Russia Today and Sputnik, and tomorrow, following the changing political situation, the media or companies cooperating with Twitter in any other country can be declared the American to be the American enemies.
как телекомпания Russia Today могут до этого вкладывать деньги в рекламные кампании или какие-то совместные проекты.
And they can receive this loss. And one more remark, according to Twitter, in 2016, RT spent more than 200,000 dollar on ad in this social network, but during this electoral campaign of 2016, for example, according to some estimates, there are some of them, the candidates received donations worth dozens and hundreds of millions of dollars. In this respect, a question arises, how, considering those, considering those sums, the Russian channel could meddle in the election and influence its outcome. We consider this move as another decision, as another effort of the U.S. administration to eliminate alternative source of information that is annoying for American elites. Here belongs the intention of the U.S. authorities to list these Russian companies as foreign agents, and our consideration of this list shows that it lists currently companies that do not produce independent media content, or they cite other materials or lobby for the vested interests. Freedom of speech has always been the building element of the U.S., and we hope that it's not just a mere assertion, but we see the contrary situation now. Moving on, November the 7th, 2017, at the Tajik village Tuda will host ceremonial opening of the monument to Red Army soldiers. The reconstruction was conducted at the personal cost of the villagers. We see it as an example of how carefully the Tajik public treats our common history, and we are resenting another act of vandalism against the Soviet monument in Sofia. The vandals attacked spoiled monument just a week ago, but now they did even more. They placed anti-Semitic motifs on the memorial. This wickedness seems to be especially cynical, as during World War II, our soldiers could prevent deportation of Jews from Bulgaria, thus saving some 50,000 people from inescapable death. But the most terrible is not desecration itself, but the most terrible in this respect is the fact that those who desecrate monuments are not even aware of their own history. These things I mentioned are not only valuable, they are significant for those who know history, and they will never afford such things. Those who come to desecrate the monuments unfortunately don't know history at all. They don't even know some glorious moments of their own history. We are convinced that these criminal acts will never meet response and sympathy among most Bulgarians, and we insisting on that Bulgaria finally do whatever is necessary to prevent desecration of the memory of the Soviet soldiers who sacrificed their lives to save the European continent from Nazism. And moving on the events in some capitals, for example, in Europe, with the participation of the Russian cities, on October the 25th, at the London underground station Baker Street, the Heart of Russia train was launched. Its design reflects the achievements in science and culture, and this event was timed to 2017 bilateral year of science and education, and it was conducted and financed by the administration of the city of Moscow. The project also involves 25 outdoor ads and a mobile app. The train is expected to run along three lines until the end of 2017. This event aroused vivid interest among city dwellers and tourists, and we expect that this
a bilateral humanitarian ties, and I would like to say that the same events are organized by the British Council. And in Portugal, Petersburg meetings were organized upon the initiative of the government of St. Petersburg. It was an educational cultural event in Porto. The main objective is to promote the Russian language, culture, and education. Certain events were organized in other cities. The highlight of the program was the leading opera singers' concert from St. Petersburg in House of Music Porto. These meetings were favorably received by Russian compatriots who took part in the preparations for this project, and therefore there is a proposal to organize the same events in Algarve in 2018-2019. In Mexico, from the 19th to the 22nd of October, the Autonomous University of Nayarita hosted the annual national meeting of Russian teachers from Mexico. It was organized by the Mexican Association of Russian Teachers, other organizations of Russian compatriots, ambassador, and the Federal Agency for the Commonwealth of Independent States and compatriots living abroad. It was also hosted by the Russian ambassador, president of the association, and the university rector. The program included presentations on the Russian educational system, and they provided full information about government scholarship programs. The program included seminars on career development and poetry reading competitions, Russian music concerts, and photo exhibitions. Today's Russia. Young Mexicans are vividly interested in Russian history, cultural language, and education. Also, they mentioned with satisfaction the fact that Mexicans get a lot of scholarships. In the academic year 2016-2017, 25 scholarships were granted to Mexican citizens. For the academic year of 2017-2018, 50 scholarships will be provided. Also, this event was organized by the government of the state and the governor of the state, mayor of state's capital, Tepic City. This event was widely covered in local media, and such conferences are held by the federal agency and the Fund Russian World with the participation of local authorities and special purpose organizations. These forums promote Russian language and Russian culture and Russian education abroad. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Governmental Committee on Compatriots Living Abroad support this work because they think that they strengthen humanitarian bilateral relations between the Russian Federation and other countries, and they also grant the right for Russian-speaking communities to get their training in the Russian language. Also, we took notice of the report about the situation of rights of migrants in other European countries that was published in September this year. We have noticed that the situation is quite severe because of the severe circumstances is going on in Italy and in Greece. The same situation is observed in Spain, Sweden and France, because there they liquidate illegal refugee camps. The agency register other cases of hatred in Sweden, Finland, the Netherlands, Germany, in Austria. There remain acute concerns in the EU about rights of migrant children. The International Organization for Migration also paid attention to the fact that there are no people who protect rights of children migrants, while we see cases of disappearance of children, and we have told about it many times. The problem of trafficking in persons remains unsolved, according to the UNICEF report and the IOM report. There are 77% of children who become victims. These are the children who use the Mediterranean channel to reach Europe. These facts given in the report once again demonstrate the problem and the inability of the European Union to elaborate consolidated policy on immigration. They don't want to be responsible for providing assistance to refugees and forced migrants. The European countries just try to reduce their numbers, and they put refugees at risk, and they even deny protection to them guaranteed by international law. Therefore, we consider useful to remind that the situation with migrants in Europe is a result of responsible intervention in domestic affairs of Middle East and Northern Africa states, and this is because of the forced change of undesirable regimes. Because of that, there are humanitarian disasters and rise of terrorism, and therefore there are unbearable conditions, living conditions, because there is threat to life and violations of human rights and fundamental freedoms, which caused massive flows of migrants and refugees. Therefore, it looks ambiguous, the idea promoted by the European Union in the United Nations and other international organizations to devise responsibility for refugees and migrants. And finally, another material that I need to talk about, and it's quite sarcastic, but it's a sad news. We took notice about the news that was published in a French portal that was an open letter to the mayor of Paris to rename the Alexander III Bridge. The campaign was headed by the liberal artist and actor Thierry Paulin-Valette. The letter was based on the petition, which was signed by 1,400 people. According to the supporters of the idea, the idea of this bridge contradicts republic values. We are sure that this bridge is a symbol of the friendship between France and Russia and symbolizes the alliance that was concluded between Russia and France in the end of the 19th century. And if we follow the logic of these people, then we have to change the name of many villages, streets and cities that are named after many heroes and kings like Henry IV and Joan of Arc. If the true motives of these people is a concealed Russophobia, then we have to disappoint them, because they can speak to linguists and they will find out that there are many words in the Russian and foreign languages that share the same root. They'll know about the strong and mutual influence of Russian and French cultures have on each other. One petition cannot destroy cultural and spiritual heritage of our countries. Now, I'm ready to answer your questions.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, Community publicradio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.